appropriation, and it is November the 18th. And we hope that this will be a relatively brief meeting.
Yes, we do.
The first thing we're going to do is ask Victoria to give us a little background and history, and then explain her recommendation, her draft recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. To remind the committee what our process is, we are the legislature is required by both the Constitution and statute to fully fund education, K-12 education, according to the quality education model or some other metric of the legislature's choosing. We met in September to review the statutory and constitutional requirements, to review the report of the Quality Education Commission, to accept the report of the legislative fiscal office giving us their number of the appropriation. With those two numbers, we were able to determine that there is a gap. The Constitution and the statutes then require that we publish our findings in a report, which is due and must be published 180 days following sine die of each odd-numbered year full year legislative session. So that date for us is January 2nd. Based on the committee's desire, I went ahead and drafted the report, which you have available to you on OLIS. Just to give you an idea of what is in the report, to walk through it very briefly, page 2 is a review of the constitutional and statutory requirements as presented to the committee at our last meeting. Page 3 is a discussion of the quality goals as given to us by the Quality Education Commission and a description of the quality education model. Pages 4 and 5 give us their impact analysis and student achievement expectations. They presented us with 5 examples, including early reading, increasing graduation rate of boys, increasing graduation rate of economically disadvantaged students, increasing attendance rates, and having all students on track by grade 9. One of the requirements of the statute is that we are to look at 2 different alternatives. The alternatives presented by the QEC were alternative 1 was targeting student groups with investments, and the second alternative was timing the investments in various ways so as to have the impact happen sooner versus later. Pages 8 to 12 are the K-12 funding appropriations for the 2015 to 2017 biennium. That number is $7.373 billion, and that number is from the LFO memo that was given to us by Doug Wilson. Page 13 is the sufficiency determination. So you have the QEC allocation target of $9.158 billion, which creates a funding gap of $1.78 billion. That is the smallest funding gap since 2005, as per the chart that you will see on page 13. That always seems to be kind of what people are looking to see in the report. Pages 15 to 17 are the factors leading to insufficiency, revenue growth challenges historically, and increasing costs. Pages 17 and 18 are the impact of the insufficiency. The QEC predicts continued progress towards goals, but at a slower rate than would be expected under the full QEM. One of the more significant issues there is under 75% high school completion by 2025, which is the date the legislature has set for the achievement of 40-40-20. Page 18 is the post-secondary quality education goals. As we discussed at our last meeting, no statutory goals have been put in place in terms of post-secondary education, and the Legislative Council's office did confirm that there are no new statutory goals other than the aspirational goals of 40-40-20. The appendices include the relevant statutes and prototype school funding comparisons from the quality education model. So that is the basis of the report.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Ms. Cox? Anybody have any questions? No? Okay, at this time, then, I will open a public hearing on the recommendation. And Ms. Wimmer is here. We'll start with Ms. Wimmer, since she signed up ahead of time, and then we'll have Mr. Greenstead. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 43,000 members of the Oregon Education Association. It's my honor to support the report before you and urge its passage, but we do have a couple minor suggestions that we'd like to offer you with respect to finalizing the text. And you have my written testimony. I'm just going to very quickly go over what some of those pieces are. As the report notes, the 2015 legislature appropriated $7.373 billion for K through 12 for the two-year budget, which is a slight decrease by percentage of the general fund lottery share from the previous biennium by just tenths of points. This budget's further stretched by the carve-outs that come off the top of the state school fund before it's distributed to districts, and those carve-outs have grown over time. And that means at the expense of district distributions. This funding reality is exacerbated, of course, by Oregon's increased expectations of its system, even though it is insufficiently appropriated. Finally, the size of the biennium's funding gap is just $1.785 billion, which is smaller than previous shortfalls, as your staff has just explained to you, and we concur with all these facts. We also think that in the discussion of how we got there, what the revenue concerns are especially, the discussion of factors leading to K-12 and post-secondary's funding insufficiently should include the fact that there's a drastic decline in corporate tax share as part of the total resources Oregon would otherwise have at its disposal to invest in key services. According to the Oregon Center for Public Policy and other references, the high watermark for corporate share was in 1973 at 18.5% of general fund lottery, and today that share is projected to be for the biennium 6.4%. And that's why Oregon ranks number 50 out of the 50 states in corporate taxation. And that's a fact that has not resulted correspondingly in a rank of number one in job creation, though we'd like to think it would. But it has diminished your ability significantly to properly resource our schools. So the difference is significant because the total revenue lost in that decline would fully close the adequacy gap described in this report. Given that the cuts in property taxes shifted primary funding of K-12 to the state, the shift away from corporations paying their fair share is part of the story, and it's become part of the urgency we feel and a problem we hope to remedy. And we would ask, therefore, that the decline in corporate share be included in the report as part of the background information on the cause of the insufficiency. The second change that we would suggest is that references are made to the state's ambitious aspirational goal of 40-40-20. Well, that goal assumes a 100% graduation rate in 10 short years. The quality education model, by contrast, assumes a 90% graduation rate. So our adequacy gap is actually larger than is estimated if we are to assume that our true goal is 40-40-20. And that difference in funding, that last 10% increment, may be inestimable, but it's still a point I think is warranted to be included in the report, because the adequacy issue is an even larger gap than advertised, and if we're going to take the goal seriously of reaching 100% graduation rate, it's a point that should be made. The most important thing that this biennial report reveals, I think, to Oregonians is that Oregon has ambitions that have been chronically underfunded. And therefore, our institutional capacity to help all students achieve also misses the mark. And we can't have it both ways. We can't support a 65% of adequate budget and expect 100% results. And yet we're being asked to do that every day. And that is something that my members and the students they serve live with every day as they try to help kids achieve from all walks of life. And so with that, I thank you for your time and the opportunity to testify.
Thanks for coming, Lori. Questions for Ms. Wimmer? Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Monroe. Thank you for being here, of course. And I thought we were just going to have this, you know, boring go over a report thing, but now you've got me all excited here. So, will you please send me the information about the gap that you just referred to with the corporate share? I think that's very interesting because I'd like to look at that. And then the second thing is that I actually did read this online before, and so I was looking for it here in the paper copy, but the All Students on Track by Ninth Grade. Can you talk to me a little bit about, I know you didn't produce this report, but kind of what role OEA plays in that program, that concept of all students on track by ninth grade. Do you have a voice in that policy, or how does that work with your with the teachers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, to the extent that public education is a player in policy tables throughout the conversations around public education, and we are always striving to improve the lot in life for our students, I think we play a pretty significant role. That's one of several metrics that were identified as possible measuring sticks for how are we doing, getting close to those goals. The key problem for our students right now appears to be that of income. The number one predictor of your success in academia in general is family income, SES. And so we have about 50% of our kids are born on the Oregon Health Plan. About 50% are eligible for free or reduced lunch. We have a formal poverty rate of about 21%. We don't have the highest poverty rate of all the states, but we do have, if you take a larger swath of low-income students, which is what free and reduced is, I think that's 250% of poverty level. We do have a large proportion of students who we would describe as poor. And that is the number one indicator. Now, the ninth grade on track is not a creature of our creation. Okay. My understanding is that it's measured by eighth grade graduation. That's what ninth
grade
is.
That's what's in here. So, Senator Monroe, I want to bring something to folks' attention, at least in Portland Public Schools, and I'm going to be looking into this further because I only learned about it in the last couple of weeks. I'm concerned that in order to achieve some of these goals, that the goalpost is moving. And perhaps you're aware of what I'm about to say. And again, I need to look into the details because I only learned about this in the last few weeks. But in Portland Public Schools, it appears that we are now giving credit for study hall. We have a problem, at least in the high schools in Portland, if we don't have enough teachers. Okay, there aren't enough teachers. The classrooms are huge. There aren't enough, you know, they have too many students that they're responsible for, right? And so we need more teachers, I would argue, in the high schools. And so there aren't enough classes because we don't have enough teachers. And one of the problems is the kids aren't on track to graduate. And so we, in Portland Public Schools, a broadcast, whatever you want to call it, a blast was sent out from the school district communicating that there was going to be a change in the credits and that study hall would now be, basically included towards a credit graduation, something of this type. And I was wondering if you knew anything about that, or I feel like it's kind of covering up something that I'm a little bit concerned about. And again, I haven't looked into it, but I think the solution for one of the solutions of the ninth grade on track is to have more teachers in the school so they can have smaller classes and work with the students, not this other, and I was just wondering if you knew anything about that. This
Mr.
is very
Chair,
recent,
Representative
but.
Taylor, hear, hear. and as a Portland parent, I get those blasts as well.
Okay.
I can tell you that in January of 2015, the Department of Education, or the Board of Education, voted in extension of the instructional hours and redefinition of what counts. And my understanding is, and I'm not an expert in this, but my understanding is that instructional hours were tightened up quite a bit. That, for example, the number of inclement weather days was reduced and phased out. The non-academic field trips and study and assemblies were phased out. Passing time was phased out. And my understanding is that study hall was only allowed if it was the kind of study hall that had a certified teacher in the classroom to help them with homework, you know, to resolve issues. It wasn't really just a goof-off period. It was an intensive drill down kind of tune-up kind of thing. But that would probably be a question that would be more fully answerable if you spoke with Portland Public Schools.
Yeah, just something that I think we need to be looking into because we are putting pressure on the school districts to increase graduation rates, and I want to make certain that we're actually supporting them to do that, and school districts not feeling or school districts making their own decisions, I guess it could be. It's not necessarily just the state, but that the states and the school districts are not just rearranging the decks, the chairs on the deck of the Titanic. You know what I mean? I want to make certain that we're actually helping them achieve their goals. So I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention.
Thank you. Are there additional questions for Ms. Wimmer? Lori, thank you very much. We appreciate you coming.
You bet. And Mr. Chair, my the reference to the research is in my testimony. I added the link to the report itself, so I think you can find it if you just click that link.
Perfect.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Greenstead. Welcome.
Thank you. Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Richard Greenstead. I'm a resident of North Portland. I have two students in Portland Public Schools. They attend Chief Joseph Ockley Green K-8, and they're currently in fourth grade and sixth grade. I'd like to share with you just a little bit about what I'm seeing in today's environment of the perpetual underfunding that we've seen since the early 90s. And how the burden of that underfunding is being placed squarely on the backs of the most vulnerable students in our state. Looking at page 20 of the report here, it talks about the legislature's goals and the characteristics of a school system. It says provides equal and open access and educational opportunities for all. What I'm seeing isn't anywhere close to this. We can talk about middle grade programming that we're offering students. You know, we can talk about achievement gaps, but we're not even offering the opportunity to all students to achieve. But what I'm seeing, too, is parents that choose to opt out, parents with resources, parents that know how to navigate complex systems. They opt out of schools that lack resources. They opt out of schools that don't have the programming. And that creates clusters of very low-poverty schools. Those schools, the parents pool resources. They volunteer hundreds of hours every year. I'm one of those parents. I volunteer a lot. They pool financial resources and help get more teachers in the classroom. What that leaves is our high-poverty schools. Title I money and equity allocations is not enough, and it's not cutting it. And again, we're putting the burden squarely on the back of our most vulnerable students in the state. And each time this happens, the system becomes more unequal and offers less opportunity to those students. So for parents such as myself, this report, the underfunding, it's an annoying inconvenience. It's, you know, my kids should do fine. I'll help them out. They'll get through. But for our most vulnerable students, it's devastating. They don't have options. So what I think with this report, I think we need to be more direct with the citizens of our state. The most direct quote in here from the report I can see is says on page 6, without a dramatic increase in funding in the near future, policymakers will need to make choices among a set of initiatives for improving student outcomes. I suggest we go farther and start to convince the people of our state what we're doing here and say something like the following. We know that this funding gap will have lifelong devastating effects on our most vulnerable students, and as a state, we are not yet ready to make the investment in these students' lives. If we skip ahead to page 15, it talks about the increased number of special education students and how we're not meeting their needs. Again, the underfunding being placed squarely on the backs of our most vulnerable students. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, with that said, I'd like you to consider not approving this report. Approving reports like this that excuse the underfunding just perpetuates the cycle of poverty within our communities. It's time to be honest with the citizens of our state about the harm we are all complicit in if we continue down this path of disinvestment. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you for coming, and thank you for your report. I was a public school teacher for 21 years. As a young legislator, I advocated that we fund schools appropriately through a sales tax. I got unelected at the next election because of that. If you would like to get behind some effort to raise additional revenue, then we can appropriately fund schools. But what you've seen is through the initiative process, there's been a significant reduction over time in the amount of money that comes from property taxes and from other measures, and yet it's not been replaced by any other revenue source. And so we really do have a revenue problem in this state, and until that problem is properly addressed, we're going to keep every 2 years having a report that says we're inadequate, and maybe we're not quite as inadequate as we were 2 years ago, but we're still inadequate. It's frustrating.
Mr. Chair, I agree, and I don't want it to look like I'm just pointing fingers at you. I believe every citizen of the state is complicit in what we're doing. What I'm not seeing is the voices of leaders saying, let's discuss this, let's look at what we're really doing and what harm we're really causing. Most of the middle class will find workarounds. We'll find things that work for our kids, and we'll get them through the system just until we get them out of the system, and then it stops. But I would like more of a conversation. Maybe not approving this report is a start of that conversation. I support the Better Oregon and their work to improve the corporate tax and those measures. I supported I don't support that I'm going to get a kicker credit on this next round of taxes. That should have gone directly to education.
And I put legislation in last session that would have allowed the voters to vote on whether or not that kicker should go to education. Mm-hmm. That, unfortunately, that legislation didn't get a hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Yes, I believe me. I agree that obviously this funding gap, and I at least can speak personally, and I know that others here as well, we have worked tirelessly to try to increase the revenue. What ends up unfortunately happening is that you take money away from homeless services to pay for high school, and this is not as if there's some money sitting over here and we're not spending it. There is no money over here to spend. And in addition, there's things that maybe don't make it to the broader public. But for example, Representative Reed, who's now running for treasurer for the state, he and I put forward a bill on the House side to redirect the kicker so that it would be spent for schools. Unfortunately, it did not become law. And so there are folks who do try to do such things, as Senator Monroe has pointed out, and I'm sure others have other examples. But the desire to have high-quality schools is something that both Democrats and Republicans here in the building very much want to have. It's just a struggle to have the resources to get there. Would you say that's inadequate?
That's absolutely correct.
Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, I completely agree. I mean, we have to increase the revenues. Mm-hmm. I feel like this report it glosses over where we're failing. I think the QEC does great work. I appreciated seeing Mr. Gill and Mr. Reeder's presentation at the last report that I watched online. But we're not. I think we're not being as direct with where the harm is and what we're doing. What those students that are not graduating, where they're ending up, and the life choices that they don't have now because of that. So I think we could go a long way to increase the public support. And I appreciate your leadership in trying to pass those initiatives and work toward that. But I need more of it. I would like to see more of it. I'm really frustrated within the school system right now with a fourth and sixth grader.
Well, thank you. And my grandson now is a sixth grader at Hosford. So I don't have any children left in Portland Public Schools, but have a grandson. Thank you for coming. We appreciate it. Appreciate your input. You have to understand that this committee is appointed on a temporary basis, and we are required to approve something. If we don't approve this, then we have to come back for another meeting and we have to approve something. So that's the nature of the Oregon Constitution and the legislation that was passed about 10 years ago. Yeah.
15
yeah. years ago. It's been a lot of fun. You're having fun. Thank you very much for your
Mr. Chair, interview. Members of the committee, thank you.
You bet. And questions? Okay, Representative Taylor, what happened to Representative?
I'll go get her. I didn't know if there was anyone else speaking. Is there anyone else speaking?
Was there anybody else that wanted to be heard? Oh, Jody, come on up.
I'm not going to speak quite to the point, but to an idea we've come across. We started looking at data centers Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon. We started looking at data centers and kept looking further and further and further, and our analysis shows that at this point, we are abating in various enterprise zones and urban renewal districts $200 million a year of education dollars. $200 million is enough for 2 weeks of the 3 weeks of school we're missing. And the laws were made back when 70% of education dollars came from the local community, and so they were giving up their own dollars when they were making the decision. Yeah. But now they, it's like, well, it's, we're going to have a tiny hit because the school funding formula will backfill. And so in essence, when a community decides they'll have an urban renewal district, they are giving up statewide dollars, not local dollars. And the impact of that is that's where 2 weeks of schools disappeared to. And so it is one of the places we could look at a funding solution is to say, you know, that law was made when you're giving up your education dollars. Now you're giving up statewide education dollars. And so from now on, when you form an enterprise zone or an urban renewal district or pass out a SIP or whatever it is you're doing, you can give up local dollars, but you can't give up education dollars. And that $200 million here includes kindergarten through community college dollars.
Okay, thanks. Other questions for Ms. Weiser? Thank you very much, Jody. Okay.
I think there was one more person that wanted to say something.
Somebody else wanted to be heard? Come on up. Identify yourself.
Yes, and Senator Monroe, my name is Russ Dondero. I'm from Forest Grove. And I'm a retired college professor who's in this building rather regularly. Many of you know me personally as a housing advocate, but also working on environmental issues, but also over the years concerned about the issue you're focusing on today, and particularly the funding aspect of it. And I don't need to tell anybody on the committee that the source of the problem is called Measure 5. And until we crack that nut by removing it through the initiative or referendum process, we're never going to solve the gap between the QEM and what we actually fund education. It's always going to be somewhere between $1.5 and $2 billion per annum, per biennium. And so we have to, I think the presentation made by Victoria Cox, the staff person, and comments made by my good friend Lori Wimmer suggest some corporate money that might be available if we're creative and actually expect and ask corporate Oregon, particularly Intel, Nike, and those large entities to up their fair share of contribution to local education through state taxes or through local taxes. I'm not going to pretend I have a particular formula, but living in Washington County, as I do, the heart of, as people in Washington County say, and I sort of blanch at this, the economic engine of Oregon, because along with that, we also have one of the highest poverty rates and homeless rates in Oregon. So I think as someone who sees Washington County from Forest Grove and from a different perspective, I think that those who have should contribute more than they do. And we have a classic case here in Oregon, as we do nationwide, of income disparities. And we are now recruiting. I think Nike is going to be recruiting to in its expansion plans to over 2,000 residents who will live in South Hillsborough. And so those people are going to come in with high expectations for their children, as they should, in the Hillsborough and Beaverton Public Schools. In fact, the Beaverton Public Schools are going to expand, apparently, a high school or maybe a grade school or two. So with those expectations will come parents who will demand more of their local education. And if they don't get it, then they will, have their children exit the public school system, which then depletes the base of good students and role models and community support and family support. So I think, like Jody Weiser, another good friend who I work with on similar issues, I think that the nut is, as you know, is Measure 5. And until we face that boogeyman down, we're not going to solve this problem except by incremental means. And I certainly hope in the interim, before we solve that Rubik's Cube, we do some incremental tinkering, because I'm not one who's going to say here that we should wait for Nirvana to happen before we do anything. Yeah. I have a granddaughter who attends the Portland Public Schools, a kindergartner, who attends an excellent public school, Reike Elementary, in Southwest Portland, and we're very pleased, as are her parents, with the education she's getting. But she has a lot of built-in advantages. Two grandparents who are educators, a grandmother who's a librarian, children's librarian, and two excellent parents. So, like the parent before you who has ponied up with his own resources, families who have those resources can do. But my librarian wife will tell you, who works with disadvantaged Hispanic children in Forest Grove, not all families have those advantages. And so I think we need to really focus on what really caused this problem down the road in 1990 when we passed Measure 5. So
thank you.
Thank you.
I opposed it.
I did,
Bill?
Too.
Thank you, Chair Monroe. Committee, for the record, Bill Clothing Carpenters Industrial Council. I salute the people that have been working hard on trying to get our kids educated in this state. But we're not gaining. Every report that comes out, we're not gaining. Again, I salute the people that are working hard. But it's like the old Viking ship where you had 40 oars on each side. They're not all rowing the same direction at the same time. If we look back, when Oregon started losing their industrial jobs in this state, that's when our school system started folding up. The tax revenue stopped. I'm talking hundreds of thousands of industrial jobs in this state. Look at the Santa Ana Pass. Look at the coast. Look at eastern Oregon. Look at southern Oregon. All those counties are hurting. And I hate to say this way, but, you know, it seems like the emphasis on school funding and helping schools is in the Portland area. We've got to help rural Oregon. We can't cast them aside. I know Portland's got the power. And that's where the jobs are. But ironically, here we're going to have to start building homes for people in Portland when that money should be going to schools. We fooled around. We're going to lose the Elliott Forest, a guaranteed school income, common school land. We're going to lose that. Why? Because nobody's working together on trying to save jobs in this state. Coos Bay Project. My opinion is that should have been online 2 years ago. We're still fighting over permits. It seems like there's a dedicated group in this state that does not want industrial jobs in this state. That's where we need to work. We got kids coming up that needs jobs. Whenever I graduated out of high school, my dad asked me if I wanted to go to college. I said, no, Dad, I'm going to work. Within 2 years, I was buying a home. I had a new vehicle. That don't happen today. It can't happen today.
Bill, in my day, I both had a full-time job and I went to college at the same time. That's what we used to do in those days.
That's a very good point, sir, but the jobs are not there today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for testifying. We appreciate it. I think it's ready to close public hearing and open a work session. Taylor, a motion, please.
Yes, Chair Monroe, I move to adopt the draft report on public education appropriation.
Discussion of the motion. Any, yes, Senator Girard.
I'm on a roll today, so why not?
Yeah, you are.
If you go to page 8 of this, you give a summary of how much money goes to education. There is something glaringly absent from that, and that is the Department of Education pass-throughs, which are probably around $1 billion. So, I've been on this committee. This is not my first go-around, but it's the first time I've ever caught that. And so my question to staff is that ever anticipated anywhere else other than on page 8, where it is glaringly absent.
Ms. Cox, do you have any?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the Department of Education gets, it's over $1 billion. What is it, about $1.2 billion, do you remember? I think it's about $1.2 billion. About 80%. Yeah, it's a lot of it's federal money. It's 80% pass through, or at least. So that money, it goes to education, and that's not on the addition list as to how much money goes to education.
You're on page 8.
Page 8.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I wish I would have caught that earlier, but, you know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Girard, I would say the numbers come directly from the Legislative Fiscal Office. And if they don't include that reference, I don't know how we would include that information. I'm not certain that that would be relevant to the discussion about our adequately funding K to 12.
Well, I think it most certainly does. I think it would reduce the size of the deficit probably to around $400 or $500 million. But it definitely is money that is spent by schools, and is definitely pass-through money, and it's federal money, which goes to schools. So that needs to be included in any summary that we have as to the total revenue that goes to education. Having said that, I do believe that we're underfunded. But to the gentlemen's that talk from Portland, I just want to make one couple points. One is ballot measure 5. We have ballot measure 5 because it passed big time in Portland. It didn't pass in rural Oregon. Number 2 is when the crunch hit, Portland School District was looking at cutting Chinese immersion. In my school district, we were trying to keep a hold of an algebra teacher. I mean, there's a huge difference between rural schools and urban schools right now. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. Bill Cluding left. When we harvested timber, we had some of the top schools in the nation. Now we rate close to the bottom, depending on what study you look at. But until that is rectified on page 8, I can't vote for this.
Okay, additional discussion of the motion. The motion is to approve the draft as presented by Ms. Cox. Why don't we call the roll?
Senator Girard?
No.
Senator Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Springer?
No.
I don't want to come back.
I know.
Senator Taylor?
Yes.
Come back. You want to come back?
Yep.
Excuse
me. Representative Comp is not here. And is excused.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yeah.
I'm not happy with the report. May I make some comments?
Sure.
I know we're in the middle of calling the roll. I'm certainly not happy with reports. I'm unhappy with a lot of what I've heard today, and quite frustrated, frankly. That said, this is a report to adopt, or a motion to adopt a report.
A report, that's right.
And frankly, to one of the points that was made about this being an exercise, the word futility wasn't used, but that's what it meant, and I agree. This is a process that voters adopted through the ballot measure initiative and said, you will do this.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying we should or we shouldn't. I'm just saying it's important to realize where things emanate from.
Yeah.
And so we go through this exercise. I don't know, this is probably fourth or fifth time I've been through this exercise, and it's the same. I'm not going to choose to hold up the process because Representative Comp isn't here, and I will give a courtesy yes. I know that this is not something that goes to the floor. I would have a different approach if that were the case. So if I may, I would like to, since we have not gaveled down, change my no vote to a yes.
Okay. And Monroe votes aye. Okay. Anything further to come before us?
Since we have to do this on an annual or semi-annual session, next time I do think that you need to incorporate the Department of Education pass-through money.
Okay. Well, Ms. Cox will probably be doing it again in a couple of years, so she's listening to what you have to say.
And I apologize. I apologize for not finding that earlier, but that is, you know, that's a big chunk of change.
Okay. Anything further to come before us? Thank you.
I just wanted to comment that on another page here, I don't know exactly, but just looking through this on page 10, it shows for the school funding formula resources, it does show state, other, and federal funds in that chart there. And so it shows you that it's less than 1%. And then...
it's way more than 1%.
No. For the school funding formula.
Yeah.
School formula resources.
Yeah, but the
things like the free and reduced lunch program, which of course is a huge number of federal money.
That's not the same.
No, I'm just sharing. There is some additional when she's doing her research.
You two have your argument.
This is our argument.
The funding formula, how we distribute the general fund allocation, mm-hmm. that doesn't have to do with federal money allocation.
Well, I'm sorry we don't have more time. We're limited by the fact that we pretty much need to make a decision today. Thank you, Representative Springer, for your courtesy vote, and this meeting's adjourned.
To the
vote, and this meeting's adjourned.